listen up. Y'all, it's the queen of automation, Megan Donnelly, here to give you inspiration. Founders and business owners, gather round. I'ma show you how to build systems that'll astound. Streamline your processes, no need for complications.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Chronically Automated, the podcast where we talk about messy systems for, or awesome systems for messy realities. I don't know. I feel like sometimes it's messy systems and messy realities. I'm your host, Megan Donnelly.
I'm your co-host, Anthony Labosco. How did that sound?
Anthony and I, that sounds perfect. We've nailed it. We figured it out at the beginning. I think everybody by now knows what we, the kind of stuff we talk about. Before we get into burning down what we just built, that's our topic for the day, by the way. I have to tell you guys a funny story, because this past weekend, I was at a professional air hockey tournament in Chicago, Illinois, which, yes, that exists. It is a real thing. Yeah, so for those of you that don't know, there is a USAA, and it's the United States Air Hockey affiliation, or, and it is a professional sport that you can make money doing. And I was not competing. My youngest son was competing. And the reason I'm telling this story is because it fits so great with entrepreneurship, because you can make money doing literally anything as long as you are passionate enough about it. If you're passionate enough about it and you love it enough, you can figure out a way to make money. So we go to this, it's called the Midwest Game Conference. And it's all these like old school video games. It's got Tetris and Pac-Man and pinball machines. And it's all the old school like arcade games. Well, they had air hockey there. And they were running these tournaments, and come to find out, we meet this group of men who are my age, and Anthony's like our age, and they are world-ranked professional air hockey players. And I was like, what? You know, you're like, give me a break, right? Like, come on. Like, this game that you play in the bars, and like, you know, this is not, this can't be a real thing. Sure as shit, this is a real thing. These guys fly all over the country. The world championships are in Texas every year. And so my son won 3 years in a row while we were in Milwaukee. And his last year, he won entry into his, they wanted him to come to this tournament so bad, because he's the youngest player that they've got right now. And so he won these tournaments like 3 years in a row. And now he went to Chicago. He finished for his very first tournament. He finished 46 out of, I don't know, what did I say, 58 players or something like that. So not too shabby. He went 2 rounds before he got knocked out. And now he is the only ranked player in the state of Wisconsin. So he's number one in the state of Wisconsin, because there are no professional players in Wisconsin. So he's like so excited. He's telling his friends about this thing, you know, and he's like, and the winner, and this is where all of us as adults, this is where I'm going to make you laugh and chuckle. Because I say, make money doing this thing, right? So here I'm like, oh God, my son now wants to be a professional air hockey player and esports gamer, right? I was like, oh my God, he's going to be eating ramen noodles for the rest of his life. Like, this is, and so the guy who won, right, this is where it gets really funny, because the guy who won the whole tournament, he actually flew in from North Carolina to Chicago just to compete in this tournament. He won, wait for it, drum roll, $1,000.
But it was so,
and I'm thinking to myself, so I don't know, again, for all of the 20-somethings out there that are listening to this, or maybe anyone that's left their house and tried to stay in a hotel for a weekend, dude broke even. North Carolina to Chicago, stayed for 4 days. He didn't make any money. And so it was just really funny to me, because we had to have this like discussion with our son, like, yeah, it's really great, but you're still going to need a big boy job. Like, you have to figure out what you want to do. And then this will be your side hustle, right? Like, this could be your side hustle passion project. You can, anyway, I just thought the whole thing was funny and totally relevant to like entrepreneurship, because sometimes, again, you can make money doing anything, right? You really can. But sometimes our passion projects are just that. They are passion projects. I still encourage all of you to have them. I still want you to do them. I still want you to work on them because they bring you passion. They bring you joy. They bring you dopamine. You should 100% do them. But just know that sometimes the passion project is not going to be the thing that's going to, you know, feed you on a daily basis or a regular basis. But anyway, I just thought that it's just great. He's so excited and it's hilarious to watch him like go out in the world and like tell people that he's number one. He's the number one ranked professional air hockey champion in Wisconsin. And I'm just, it just makes me laugh every time I say it because it's a thing and it's weird. And so that was my funny story for today, but we have another fantastic topic because this is something that happens on a regular basis, right? Burning down what we just built. We all do it. We all have a tendency to build these really cool things, these really cool products, services, funnels, whatever. We build all this really amazing shit, right? It's all awesome. Well, maybe not all of it, but it's all awesome. We're just going to say it's all awesome. And then 3 months in, we're like, this sucks. We scrap it all and we rebuild from scratch. We blow it all up. We sabotage ourselves. Or that's what we're thinking, right? Like we are in our heads, all up in our heads thinking, you know, that we're sabotaging ourselves by burning it all down, starting it all over. I want to talk about the other side of this because I really don't think and don't believe, and I don't think Anthony does either, but he's going to jump in and give his opinion here in a second. I don't consider it sabotage because it's all learning. At least for someone like myself, burning it down and rebuilding it is stimulation for me. It's dopamine. It's for my brain. Besides, like, if it's not working fast enough and I want to dismantle it and figure out how I can make it bigger, better, faster, stronger, I don't necessarily think of that as sabotaging myself. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are going to completely disagree with me, and they are going to tell me to stop telling people that, because when you build something, what's the time period? Like, how long do you let it ride before you tweak it, before you change it, before you make it better or burn it to the ground and start over? Like, we talked about this a few weeks ago. With Neighbor Bee, right? Like, is that ever going to go away? It might be different when we figure out how we want to bring it back to the world, and I'm sure shit it's going to be different. But I don't believe that what you did back then by, if you want to call it burning it to the ground, shutting it down, whatever you want to call it, I don't think that that was a bad thing. Because sometimes it's not the right time. Right. The most amazing ideas, I feel like, take iterations, right? I feel like the most amazing things, the most amazing ideas, most of the brands that take up, the ones that, the overnight successes, I'm sorry, those are luck, right? Sometimes you get lucky. Does that suck for the rest of us that are sitting here watching it because we also want to get lucky? Of course it does. But that doesn't mean that what you're burning to the ground and that it's not broken. It's just, it's a pivot. And pivots are bad.
Okay. My twos. Okay. I was just waiting for the right time because, you know, I always feel like I'm always interrupting you and then I make funny faces like, you know, this and that. So.
No, you should interrupt me because otherwise I'll just keep talking. You know that.
No, exactly. I mean, my feeling on that, right, is specifically when I think when things are not built the right way to begin with, and in the case of Neighbor Bee, it wasn't built correctly. The right it was the right idea, the right way to bring something disruptive to the market that the market absolutely needed. I still think the market absolutely needs it. And that's why I'm never going to give up on that until it actually works. But that being said, I did feel that the reason why I shut it down was because it just wasn't built the right way. And I just couldn't see how it was going to go to market. Now, fast forward to today, fast forward to my business, LoboStack, which I think is actually a better, is just a better example, is when I did my pivot from, you know, working in corporate America and everything, and because of my health, I had to pivot and I started looking for a job for 6 months. I sent out 100 applications. That didn't really materialize for anything. And I still was absolutely in the back of my mind, in front of my mind, saying, you know what? My time is better spent building a business. And I was building something called Lobo IT, focusing on being a technology advisor. But a big part of that was doing sales, and I had to drum up business. I had to build, you know, business from scratch. By putting yourself out there, and again, you know, I don't want to just be on a tangent on that and engagement and things like that, but having met Megan, right? I mean, oh my God, amazing. I mean, Megan is just an amazing person, you know, in herself, but DMC in understanding, systemizing things and understanding what's possible in terms of what technology can do was really a game changer for me and really changed everything. And that's why today I have LoboStack, where I'm basically helping founders and MSPs with repeatable revenue systems. And I would never have been able to do this if it wasn't for such a strong system that we have in place. So in some cases, yeah, the time is not right to do certain things. And that's why we feel like we have to do things over. And I, believe me, I felt that way with Lobo IT, but I really didn't have another option. So I just continued to move forward. And then, you know, luck, you know, we make our own luck and everything like that. But knowing what good looks like, and that's, I knew what good looked like. I didn't know, but Megan showed me, and that's why, you know, we are where we are today. So that's why, you know, when it comes to pivoting and, you know, tearing something down that doesn't work. I mean, we tore down Lobo ID. You know, you took that website and boom, tore it down. I had no problem with that. Absolutely. And that website was only up for a few months for me. So literally tore it down and started over. And holy cow, I mean, that was the best thing I ever did. And, you know, I'm still growing, but I have two clients. I had three clients. And that's the thing too, is that you have to know that's when exactly the time is right, right?
Yep. So there's a creative high when you tear something down and rebuild it, right? Like it's not that you're breaking things because you're broken or the thing that you're tearing down is broken. You're breaking things because you're hunting for that next big high, that next big idea, right? It's not working the way that you're envisioning it or your audience, you know, like it's the same as, think of it as like A-B testing, right? I mean, it really is A-B testing, because when you have an idea that you know is a good idea that's out there in the market and you run it for 3 months. And when you think about it, 3 months is a long time for testing, right? So if you're building and you're kind of breaking stuff down every quarter, it's almost like a wiping the slate clean and testing it again. And it's a reinvention of something that you know will work, but it's not going to work this way. So here's an example. Breaking down, like, okay, so you have an entire email sequence or a workflow built out. Even though it converts at, like, let's just throw an arbitrary number out there, 35%, right? Not, if it's converting at 35% for whatever your metric is, whether that's like conversations, right? People are coming in for conversations, but they're the wrong people. It's not working.
No.
Right? So you break it down, you tear it all down, and you start over. You rewrite the emails, you rewrite the sequence, you write. So it's all based on what the output is. And people shouldn't feel bad telling their teams to redo things, telling their teams to, you know, to break things down and do it again. it's all about iteration and testing. It's almost a strategic destruction, if you want to call it that. I like calling it like strategic destruction because it should be part of your strategy. And this is something where, again, people have a tendency to, some people get it. And when I talk about these, this kind of creative ritual of breaking things down and rebuilding them, some people really get it and they are on board, and others are like, no, you gotta let it ride. But if there's a strategy behind how long you let it ride, which is what I do, right, then you're not rebuilding. It's part of your strategy. It's part of your testing. It's part of your iterations. It's part of growing bigger, better, better, stronger, right? Like we all, sometimes you hit a ceiling where you're just, you've hit this plateau of you're not growing, but you're not losing. Well, then it's time to, okay, well, something is, you're stuck, right? Something is stuck. So if you want to move past that ceiling, you have to, you're going to have to break some stuff down and rebuild stuff, right? Because you've got to figure out what that next, how to get from this point to this point. You already went from A to B. Now, how do you go from B to C, right? So when you think about creative destruction or strategic destruction, as I like to call it, go back through your SOPs, go back through your KPIs, go back through your numbers. And if you don't have any of this stuff that we're talking about, because we're throwing buzzwords out there like ridiculousness, your metrics and your KPIs are your goals, right? Like they're the numbers. You want to get X amount of customers. You want to do this. You want to sell this many products. You want to sell this many services, right? We all know what the numbers are. Those are the basic numbers. Staying ahead of that and breaking through whenever you hit those plateaus, the only way to do that is to burn some of it down and start over. Not the whole thing. I'm not talking, please don't burn down your entire business, but all of the parts and pieces, the sales part, the marketing part, the whatever part, you figure out which cog isn't working and you rebuild it. Sometimes you just have to.
Right. And, you know, there are a couple of things I will say to that, right? I mean, I think there is, and I know that there's a commitment behind everything as well. How committed are you to the project, the business that you are doing, right? And, you know, kind of bringing it back to neurodiverse, right? I mean, I think that there is, you know, that element and that way that people, I can only speak, you know, in my, you know, from my experience, that when you are neurodiverse and when you do have, let's say, some other things that might be working against you, where you may look at some reality and say, oh my goodness, this is not working. But you know what, for me, what has trumped that, which has really, you know, taken that away, is that there is no plan B. This has to succeed. And, you know, once you have that mentality where when you're doing something that has to succeed, yeah, you can burn some elements of it down. And don't get me wrong. I mean, my business is based on sales, right? So it's all about the motions that I am doing every day. If something in my portfolio, if something in my system is not working and aligning to what I'm doing on a daily basis, then yeah, something does have to change. Or if something is broken, then, you know, or not fixable, because we all know things break, but we all know that if you have a good system, then, you know, eventually it's going to, you know, work, and you have to have faith in it. You have to be patient, and you always have to have, and what you have reiterated to me is that you do have to have a plan B, in the sense of if something is not working, then maybe you have to do something manual as opposed to automate. That's fine. And that's cool. Overall, you have to be committed to the project and the overall, but you know, to your point, Megan, if you're hitting a ceiling and things like that and not getting to the next level, and I get that too. You know, in some cases I'm at that point, you know, I'm at the 2 client point and I feel I have to do much better, and I will, and I am, but you just have to keep going and you have to keep, you know, figuring some things out, what works and what doesn't. And that's why I surround myself with awesome people like yourself and other people as well, that we all kind of, you know, put our heads together. and have different perspectives on things too.
Thing to remember. I think about all of this, the biggest thing to remember is that you don't need permission from anyone to pivot. Okay. Now, when I say that, I mean, obviously, if you have business partners that you're working with, you know, you guys are working together, so you talk through things and stuff like that. But screw the market. Screw the people out there. Screw your customers, even. Like, if something is just not working, you don't need permission from anyone to pivot a vertical that is, a little bit different, and which means it's going to change up your sequences. It's going to change up how you sell. It's going to change. You don't need that permission, right? And you have to remember that. Like, you went into creating a business for a reason, and people pivot all the time. People pivot all the time. It doesn't mean that you're losing yourself. It doesn't mean that you're doing anything wrong. It doesn't mean that you're, you know, again, burning it to the ground. Some of the best business decisions come from logical, strategic pivots versus impulsivity, right? So what Anthony and I are saying is obviously you don't want to go out there and just impulsively be like, eh, and then just start all over. No. We're talking about using these burn downs, if you will, use them strategically, use them as a way to test the business of what's working and what's not working, because sometimes things come back, right? Things come back. Like, look at the fashion world is like the biggest indicator of this. Fashion trends come in and out of style all the time, and they come back and they cycle back, right? It's the same thing with these, with whatever business you are running. If there's a need for it in the marketplace and you're pivoting to a vertical, or you're just trying to come at it from a different angle than your competitor, awesome. And if it doesn't work, then you test a different way, and you test a different way, and you test a different way. It doesn't mean that you have to burn it all the way to the ground and start completely over from scratch. Pivots are the best way to burn something down, rebuild something from some scratch that still is in alignment with your business goals. I know. One of the things that I really like to do is the before and after, right? Because I do this all the time. Being in ops, we rebuild stuff all the time for customers, for our own brands. But I have a before and after of everything. Don't get rid of the stuff that you're not going to use anymore. Put it in a folder somewhere. Put it in an archive folder. I have so many archive folders. Every single client folder, every single project folder, every single year, I have an archive folder that has all the before stuff in it. As soon as we make one change, that one gets archived, and then version two gets created. Versioning is huge, and you can use it all over the place. And it's one of the best ways to also see the success of, like, the new pivot, right? The success of the new thing that you're rebuilding. The success of how does it compare to before? Because if you don't have a baseline, I think that's the biggest misconception, right? And when people talk about rebuilding and burning things to the ground and starting over from scratch, where most people get stuck or most people get into trouble is they burn it all to the ground and they start over from scratch, but they don't keep anything. So they've got all this stuff that they had.
Yeah.
And they chose not to keep it. And so now they don't really have even a baseline of what success looks like. Well, now you're truly starting over from scratch, which is really not a great way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, for Neighborby, I mean, Neighborby was, you know, I hatched it 17, 18 years ago. I still have documentation. I still have my business plan, my original plan, the designs. I mean, a lot of things. It's almost like, you know, when you walk into a forest and you're, you know, the whole analogy of, you know, when you're lost in a forest and you leave like little popcorn, you know, behind you, and people, you know, follow you a trail, you know, exactly what, you know, make exactly. And, you know, one other analogy that I want to make too, is that, you know, what Megan is talking about is really evolution. And, you know, when you can absolutely, evolution is something, I mean, think about it. Snakes constantly, they're constantly evolving. They're constantly shedding their skin.
They like shed their skins and they get a new one and they keep going. Yeah.
New one. I don't even know how long. Yeah, it's probably like what, like once a month or whatever it is, but they do it a lot, you know, and that's an analogy that is, that's always stuck with me throughout my life, you know, whether or not that's something personal or, you know, you as a person, you know, evolving and everything. I don't want to get into a whole, you know, philosophical discussion on that, but, you know, when it comes to, you know, the evolution of a business and everything like that too, it is absolutely, if you are not shedding the dead skin and evolving and kind of moving forward, then you're not doing something right. I mean, that's really, that's what it comes down to, especially in this day and age with technology moving literally at light speed. I mean, it is absolutely berserk how crazy it is. No one can say for certain, hey, what's AI going to be doing in 5 years? 5 years? No one can even predict what's going to happen in a year. Maybe even like under a year.
Next week.
Like it's crazy. You know, it's just moving so fast.
You have to move fast and adapt, right? And so the biggest pivots that are happening right now are going to be your biggest strength for your business. Being able to pivot, being able to start over from scratch when something's not working and not being afraid of it. That is the real lesson here. Do not be afraid of starting it over. Do not be afraid if it is, because at the end of the day, you're building your lifestyle, right? Whatever business you're running, whether you work for somebody else or you work for yourself, I don't care. Your goal is to build the lifestyle that you love. And if the thing that you're building after 3 months, 6 months, well, it doesn't even matter. 2 weeks. If 2 weeks is your time frame, I don't care. If you, after 2 weeks, you start building something and you physically absolutely hate it, burn it down and start over. And I know that is a people, again, like I said, people are going to poo-poo this for sure. But if you're miserable, there's some pain in building a business. I'm not saying that everything's all going to be sunshine and roses, but if you physically hate what you're working on and you're completely miserable, you should probably come at it from a different angle. Why work in technology, for the love of God?
Yeah,
things break all the time. I get pissed off. I get irritated. But you know what? I still love what I do. And I still show up every day and I give 1,000%. Do I love it every single second of every single day? No. But I love what I do. I love who I work with. I love all of my customers and my clients that I'm like building this inner circle with. And we're creating this family of people that we work with. And that, at the end of the day, that's it, right? What if I was completely, truly miserable where I hated every single morning that I woke up? I would start over. I would. I would start the heck over.
Well, you know,
I would go work at a coffee shop part-time and I would start my business over or something like that, right? Like, there are ways to do this in a productive way. Don't give up. If you have to start over, don't feel bad. Just do it.
Yeah.
Rip the Band-Aid off before you get more miserable.
What I just want to say here is that, you know, I think that if anyone is going to take anything away from this, right, especially, you know, bringing it back to neurodiverse and, you know, maybe not having the confidence in yourself for whatever reason it is and thinking that, oh my goodness, it's worse than it is now. What Megan just described, if you are miserable, if that is something that is it's just not good for you, not good for your headspace, not good for your mental health, which will affect your physical health and everything like that. That is a whole different story. But today, in this day and age, right? In this day and age, my goodness, I sound like my dad. You know, but you know, having something that you're doing that you are truly making an impact, that you are absolutely passionate about. If you are not evolving, if you are not pivoting as you are moving along, because things are changing on a daily basis, but keeping the fundamentals in place, you're not going to win. I'm sorry, but you're not. And that's really what it comes down to, is that we're giving you the permission to pivot, especially for something you love. If you hate it, that's a whole different story. You should not do that. Right? Would you agree, Megan?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. If you physically, I mean, like, it's really hard because there's a different level of hate and disdain and, you know, for everyone, right? Like, it's different. If people probably listen to me sometimes thinking, I don't know if she actually likes her job because technology is super frustrating. So there are days where I spend 80% of my day swearing, right? Like, and so somebody from the outside who doesn't really know the business and really know who I am would probably just assume that, wow, she's miserable. She hates her job.
I have to interrupt you first. I've been on many calls with Megan where she's going through workflows with me and the system is not, she like every 2 seconds, she's like, oh my God, what is this? Then finally, one moment, I forget when it was, but I'm like, Mike, I think you really love the fact that some of this stuff is not working. And that I think you love the frustration. And not that you're sadistic or anything like that, but you just love, I know that what you are doing is that you love coming up with solutions and you love working past that. And that's what you are.
Absolutely.
From the outside, in some cases, people might say, of course she doesn't like that. But no, the reality is she curses at these systems because she knows that she's going to outsmart them.
I know there's a simpler way to do things. For me, I push systems to, like, when we're talking about technology and software, I push it to the limits, right? I push every piece of software that I work with to the max. And I break the shit out of it. I do. Because I know there are simpler ways to do things. And I only pick and work with software that allows me the flexibility to bend it and mold it and shape it into something super powerful, right? And there's a reason for that, because a lot of these systems that are out there, cookie cutter systems that are, you buy them off the shelf and you put them into your business. There's so much of it that isn't going to work for you. Like, it's just the nature of software. So I usually come up with really, really out of the box ways to make systems work. And I've had multiple developers who, after the fact, are like, how did you even get it to do that? And then you walk them through, like, how it's, and they're like, oh. And this is why I'm on a lot of beta programs for a lot of different softwares, because when I, like, break it apart and mold it back together in this different way that they didn't realize was possible, because I think about it from the user standpoint. Not only do I think about it from the user, like, let's take Anthony as being somebody who I'm building for, I am also going even further and thinking about it from Anthony's customer's stand. Like, I'm looking at it not just from Anthony. Anthony is my customer, and that's great. Anthony can use the software. That's all and wonderful. If his customers think their experience is horrible and sucky, do you think you're ever going to work with Anthony again? No. And then Anthony's going to be angry with me because his system doesn't actually work. It works great for him. Well, that's cool. Who cares? And that's the people laugh at me all the time. So when I burn stuff down, this is exactly the reason why I burn it down. Because I would say, and this is being probably a little, well, whatever. I'm not even going to be conservative. I'm going to say 95% of what I see out on the market today is built for the customer and not their customers. The end user, whoever's buying your customer shit, that's who you're building for. I'm not building for Anthony. I'm building for the people that he's calling, the people that he's emailing, the people that he's texting. I'm building for them.
Yeah.
Their experience is the one that matters. Now, obviously, I don't want Anthony pissed off. Duh. But if you're not building, the whole point is to make him money. It's to save him time and make him money and make his customers enjoy working with his brand and their experience. That's the true name of the game. And so that's why I burn stuff down all the time, because it's built incorrectly. The entire world is built incorrectly in Megan's brain. Megan thinks everything is built wrong and I want to rebuild the whole world. It's all built wrong.
True.
I'm going to fix it all. Truth. Hashtag truth. Right? Have you ever seen that? Do your kids do that? Still? When TikTok... Okay, funny story before we wrap up. All of the stupid trends that come through like TikTok and... So Anthony has teenage girls. I have teenage boys and I live vicariously through them because I think they're hilarious. And all these, I don't remember this in the 80s when I was growing up. And I don't remember all these stupid, ridiculous trends, but maybe I just blocked it out because they were so bad that you didn't want to remember them. But my kids, when TikTok first came out, they would walk around and they would go, hashtag, and I was like, what are you doing? And then they would say whatever, like, hashtag Minecraft, or like whatever, Fortnite. And I was like, what is that? What are you doing? And they would videotape themselves doing it, and they would put it on TikTok or whatever. And I'm like, what is happening right now? This is so weird. Anyway, the trends, man. The trends. Don't follow the trends. Be trendsetters. Anyway. So, guys, I don't know, Anthony, if you have anything to add before we wrap it up. The point is, the TLDR of this whole episode is don't be afraid to burn stuff down if it's just not working. Don't be afraid to pivot. Don't be afraid to, you know, actually, screw all of this. You don't need our permission. You do you. The whole idea and goal behind this whole conversation is do what works for you. You don't have to listen to me and Anthony if you don't want to. You don't have to listen to Joe Rogan. You don't have to listen to, I don't care. Like, you don't have to listen to anyone. What you have to do is what works for you. And if you want to burn something to the ground and start it over because you're miserable, burn it to the ground, start over. But just keep that in a folder somewhere and then start over. But like, you know, I guess that's what we're trying to say is at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what Anthony and Megan say. It doesn't matter what your neighbor says. It doesn't matter what your mother says. Well, okay. Depending on how old you are, it might matter what your mother says. But, you know, you get the gist of it. You have to do what works for you. There are no cookie cutter blueprint templates. I don't care what any business coach on the planet tells you. There is nothing that you are just going to be able to take from somebody else and insert into your business without tweaking it marginally to fit your style, your brand, your language. I mean, there's just not. And anybody who tries to sell you the old mantra, right? It might be cliche, but if it sounds too good to be true, it's too good to be true. Duh. Anyway, that's my tangent for today. I have a lot of these. You should see our list. Maybe we should share our list with the people. I'm kidding. We're not going to do that. That's bad. Nobody wants to see that list. It's scary. Hey, it's Halloween. Happy Halloween, everybody. It's scary. Oh, man. Anthony, what are you going to be for Halloween? You dressing up?
No, you know what? My girls are older and they don't want daddy to dress up like a cow again and walk around neighborhoods. And, you know, if I did that, a cow costume? I do have a cow costume. That was my moment where I had the cow costume and you can milk me and stuff like that. My girls were so young, and they were like, "Oh my God, Daddy!"
Okay.
No, they probably were. Actually.
Did you just say you could milk you?
Yeah,
is that even appropriate? I feel like is there a judge or something that we should be asking? Like, is that appropriate to say? I'm looking around, like, "Where's Andrea? Is she going to cut that out?"
That was kind of weird. You know what I mean? It was like weird. Whatever. You know what I mean? So, like on the stomach, you have like the.
I think one of the funniest costumes that I've seen in probably the last like I don't know 5 to 10 years or whatever was Rich's mom, and she was 50 Shades of Grey. And she literally just had a gray shirt and gray pants on. And then around her neck, she had paint swatches, like all different like variations of gray. And she just like wore it around her neck. And so the funny, I mean, she's like, you know, this little like 70-year-old lady. And she's walking around with like these gray paint swatches in an entire gray outfit. And people are like, what are you? And she's like, I'm 50 Shades of Grey. And I was like, oh my God. And the conversation starter, it was hilarious. The whole night, it was so funny because it was not, you know, like people weren't expecting it. And I'm like, that right there, that is like a creative entrepreneur at work. Like that, oh my God, it was so funny. So wrong, so funny, all the things. All right, we're done. That's a wrap. I have nothing else to talk about. Happy Halloween, everybody. We'll see you next week. And remember, technology, operations, neurodiversity, all the stuff. It's all only good when it works. And hopefully we are giving you guys some insights and tips and tricks, which I hate tips and tricks, but you know, hopefully we're giving you guys some insights into how to make your life easier. If you are neurodiverse as an entrepreneur, you know where to find us if you have questions. And goodbye for now. Bye, everybody.
Bye.